Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 732. The topic is training and the title is You Get What You Pay For. I don't often talk about this direct of a topic in regards to online coaching and paying for services because I never wanted this podcast to come across as just being, you know, a big commercial where I was just trying to get business more than I was trying to help people. And I hope that through 732 podcasts, I have established that that is the truth, is that I truly want to help the listeners more than I want to, like, more than I'm doing this to try to make money or anything like that. But I did want to discuss today in regards to online coaching or getting programming assistance is you get what you pay for. There are industries and there are things where if you pay a lot of money, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get more for it. But there are other industries in personal training and online coaching and stuff is one where if you do pay more, you do get more. I will tell you from my perspective what I know to be true of the best coaches in regards to best character of coaches. There are people who do online programming who are complete pieces of trash as human beings. And they will sell bulk programming advertised as personalized. They copy and paste from one athlete to the other, just erase the name off one program, put a new name on the other one and send it, and charge $200, $300, which is horrible. I know people who do even more worse crap than that, which is very sad. But there are as many good trainers as well. People who bust their butt, try to do the best they can, write the best they can, and some of them charge appropriately and some of them actually undercharge. They're better than what they're charging people. So price isn't always an indicator of the quality of work you're going to get. But it is a factor that should be considered, such as the best trainer in the world isn't somebody who's working with the most athletes. That isn't always true. Because if they're overextended, I know one person who works with 100 online clients. There is no way in hell you are getting personalized attention if they have 100 clients. Yeah, they might go through, you know, social media, and if you tag their name, they'll make a comment here or there, and they have little ways of kind of giving you attention. But they're not writing a program for you that is personalized for you. You're getting one of 20 templates that they have, and you're just getting shoved through as every other male powerlifter would or a female bikini athlete. They just have the category pre-written so they know where you want to end, so they just have a program for that. But it doesn't account for where you are, where you start. Do you start overweight for what your goals are? Do you start underweight for what your goals are? Do you start with, you know, different weaknesses? Maybe you're, you know, lower body dominant versus upper body dominant. Maybe you're naturally better at squat than you are deadlift, but the other person's naturally better at deadlift than squat. Whether you're an aesthetic athlete, somebody wants to stand on stage and show off awesome, beautiful muscles. Whether you're a strength athlete, somebody powerlifting, strongman, whether you're a CrossFit even. I've done CrossFit programming for tons of people. And where you are now plays an enormous role. It is insanely, insanely significant. I can't even state enough how significant it is that where you are now matters more than where you want to go. If I want to be a good NASCAR driver, and all the other people who drive NASCARs, like, they drive that type of car. Well, if I got in that type of car today and I started driving, do you think that would be safe? Would that be smart? Would I be a good driver? Hell no, I'd probably kill myself. So they're starting you in a program that's for a category, but that doesn't mean that program is for you. Now, if you're paying a low cost, knowing that you're getting mass programming, programming written for a mass amount of people, not individualized, then that's okay, but we also need to consider, what am I going to get for that? What sparked the idea of this podcast was I had seen in a Facebook group, I don't get on Facebook much, I'm mostly just on Instagram and just kind of posting things there and kind of get about my day, but I did come across on a Facebook post where somebody asked for programming, and somebody had tagged my name as like an option, so that's why I knew about it, but the person wrote, I'm looking for, I'll save some of the details, but basically they said, I'm looking for online programming and wondering what are the best services and what are the best costs. I don't want to overpay for what I want. So as people were giving suggestions, they were kind of like giving different costs that they estimated, you know, the person would be in this and that. And the person who initially asked for programming, they had it made it very clear that they did not want to pay a lot of money. They were trying to find programming for like $20 a month. But they were also asking, oh, well, does that program account for equipment availability? Is it written, you know, depending on what equipment I have? Well, for $20 a month, no. Oh, well, is it written if I can only train 3 days a week instead of 4 days a week or instead of 5 days a week? For $20 a month, no. Could the payments be frozen or delayed in case I had something coming up or this or that? For $20 a month, no. Holy shit. So this person was trying to get the best while paying the least. And that does not work in programming. Now, I program and do online client work and in-person client work for training and nutrition. And sometimes it's nutrition only, sometimes it's training only, but a combination of those. And I do corrective exercise therapy. And I do that in-person or online. The gym that I own, Brutal Iron Gym, pays for itself through membership and other things. It pays for itself. I do all my extra work to pay for my own cost of living. I have solely provided for my own cost of living doing what I do. So I don't have any other job. I don't do anything else. This is all I do, and I do it well, and I make a good living doing it. I'm not driving around in a Lamborghini, but I'm putting some money in the savings. Everything's paid for. The business is debt-free. So I am very blessed to do what I do. But what I do is, anybody who's ever worked with me, and probably most of the listeners are going to be people who've worked with me, is I have not done the kind of mass programming before. I'm in the process of writing one, and I have people doing a pilot test for me. And it is something that I've talked about in past podcasts, to where if somebody's going to follow a mass program, like $20 a month program, instead of just never getting involved on my end, never getting involved in it and letting them follow some piece of crap program, I'd rather put out my own program and at least give them an offer for that type of service that I know will be a good quality. So I'm going to write mass programming, even though I don't necessarily believe in it as the best choice, but it is where people often find themselves financially. I am of the position that if people really cared, they would find a way to save more money. They would not eat out as much or do all these other stupid expenses. People will find money for what they care about. But at the same time, there are financial constraints. So people can care about their physical health, but they have spouse, they have kids, they have, you know, something came up and broke at the house. You know, they have other expenses, and that does get in the way. And that is very real, and that is very reasonable then, that they would need a low-cost option if they still want aid and help, so that way they can be their best. I understand the conditions for why someone would need low-cost service. That's understandable, totally fine, I understand it. That's why I want to go ahead and get into it and write my version of it, so that way I'll know they're at least taken care of. So the version of online programming, like mass programming I have available, it also includes ways to correctively, like, address tight hamstrings, tight shoulders, how to, like, kind of self-heal issues that often comes up with mass programming. So I'm trying to do my best. Anyhow, this is what I do. I charge varying degrees of services. Some of the services I charge are $400 a month, but they get so much time and attention that I promise it's worth it. I promise, promise, promise. And then I have some services that are $150 a month. And they'd still get attention, but it is less attention. So, for example, somebody pays $400 a month, and they're doing a competition. They're getting like an aesthetic client or a strength client, and this is a big deal for them. Maybe they're going for a pro card. There's a big kind of thing at stakes for this. Well, we communicate damn near every day. We rewrite programming all the time, depending on however they feel, whenever they need. Their programming often includes 8, 10, 12 workouts a week, where it's a shit ton of writing of programming. We also have variances for changing of schedules. There's changing of food on a daily basis as it gets closer to the competition. So there's enormous amounts of communication. So therefore, I have to charge more money, because if I didn't and I gave all that time away to those people for a lower cost, I would be out of business. I wouldn't be able to continue to do what I do. So my goal with price variances is how much time do I give per category of people? What's an appropriate expense for that? And then trying my best to provide the best service I can for the least cost I can while still making the money that I need to provide for me and my family. And that makes sense. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue with that viewpoint. And anybody who's worked with me and then worked with other people, they all come back and for the most part. And the reason why is because I do charge a low cost for the quality of work. They won't often know the quality of effort or thought process that goes into programs. And I wanted to actually, I got asked to do this podcast. I was talking with a fellow trainer, and they're a trainer who I train. So I write their programming, I write their nutrition. I don't train with them in person because they're not close to me in terms of proximity. So they live further away in a different state. But we talk often, and they're trying to become their best self as a trainer. So they'll pay for consultations. We'll talk here and there. We'll do some extra work. And we were discussing their programming and a concept within their programming. And the conversation came up is, man, do you think anybody knows that this much thought goes into these programs? And I said, no, probably not. And she said, well, maybe you should tell people. It would be helpful to know. She's like, I know as a trainer, I like hearing everything that you're doing with my programming and the thoughts that you put in, the ways in which you process things. It's really exciting to hear that, and it makes me feel good to know that you're putting that much thought into it. And I said, well, dang, you know, I know that I put a good effort in. I didn't really think about it, making sure that other people knew that. I just figured the programs were good. They felt good. They were happy. But she pointed out is it's nice to know. You hear these things online. Well, maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do that. To know that you already have a lot of this stuff accounted for, it helps with peace of mind. And it makes me feel more kind of excited for my training, feel more supported in my training. And I said, well, okay, I'll make the podcast. So the discussion we were having was how to build up upper hamstring connection strength for their conventional deadlift. What was happening was is they had a strain on their right side. And this was due to they hadn't eaten well, they hadn't slept well, and they had some things going on in personal life. And they went ahead and did a deadlift workout a day earlier than they should have, which I didn't know they were doing. And they went heavier than they should have, which everybody does. So I'll have to give them some leeway because they're probably going to listen to this podcast. So I won't give them too much crap because I already gave them crap when we were talking in person, on like our consultation. But so they worked out sooner than they should have with less food, less sleep, and they went heavier than they should have. So they strained their right hamstring connection. Well, that's going to happen. This person's very, very strong. So they're deadlifting way over their body weight, over twice their body weight as a female. So it's pretty badass. But they ran into an issue. So I told him, I said, okay, we're going to go through our program and we're going to make these changes. And she then asked, well, why are we making these changes and how can I then know how to do it for my clients? So we went through the process in which of what I was thinking about. So I told her, I said, in your lower body workouts, you're going to do 2 lower body workouts a week. We want to find 4 light movements that address the hamstring connection in some way. They challenge the hamstring connection. We want to find 2 medium and 1 heavy. Now, what do we define as light, medium, heavy? Is light would be ways in which you cause a little bit of muscle stress, not much muscle stress, just a lot of blood flow, more like pump annoyance, and you're kind of using that hamstring connection. An example of this would be like a single dumbbell, single leg, stiff leg deadlift. No matter how hard you try to go on that, you will never be able to lift as much weight as you would on a regular all-out conventional deadlift, right? A barbell conventional deadlift. So her barbell conventional deadlift is 300 plus. She's not using a 300-pound dumbbell doing a single leg stiff leg deadlift. So we know that that connection spot is not going to be overly stressed given that movement of a single dumbbell single leg stiff leg deadlift. It's going to be a light variation of stress. So therefore, it would count as like a light movement. Another example of that might be, you know, a goblet hold dumbbell single leg reverse lunge, like a reverse lunge on like her foot on her other foot on a slider. So She's going to put all of her weight on her right foot, hold a dumbbell in a goblet squat position, and then she's going to have her left foot, like her non-working foot, on a slider. She's going to do a reverse lunge. We know that there's only so heavy of a dumbbell that she can hold in order to do that movement. It's going to be far less than what she would do in a conventional deadlift. So again, if she's deadlifting 300 plus, maybe the heaviest dumbbell she can hold doing a reverse lunge is a 40-pound dumbbell. Well, that's a pretty light stimulus overall. So those are examples of light movements. A medium movement might be like barbell stiff-legged deadlift. And she's pretty flexible, so we're going to do a stiff-legged deadlift on an elevation. So she's going to be 2 inches above the ground, and then actually going to increase her range of motion by 2 inches. Now, a stiff-legged deadlift on a barbell, even if it's elevated, she can do that for the high 100s, maybe even low 200s. So that's much heavier than the lighter movements, but it's much lighter than her conventional deadlift. So that's a medium movement. Maybe even a barbell Romanian deadlift would be a variation of something that would get into her hamstring connector, but it would be mediumly weighted compared to the lighter movements and the heavier conventional deadlift. And then her heavy lift is going to be the conventional deadlift. We're going to test it with different positionings. We can do eggshell deadlifts, we can do paused off the floor deadlifts, we can do different variations, but they're all going to be heavily loaded compared to the medium and light movements. So in her programming, I wanted her to find 4 light ones, 2 medium ones, and 1 heavy. Now my job is to tell her what those are for her, but this is what she would do with her clients. She would find 4 light, 2 medium, 1 heavy. Once she has those, so that's 7 exercises, she wants to structure those throughout the weekly programming. The 4 light movements are going to be done 2 at a time in each lower body workout. So she works out twice in the lower body a week. She's going to do 2 of the light movements in workout 1, the other 2 light movements in workout 2. And then she's going to, you know, repeat that for 4 weeks. Now, what we want to account for is one of the light movements should be unilateral. One of the light movements should be both feet on the ground. It doesn't have to be. They all can be unilateral, but they all cannot be both feet on the ground. She needs to address unilateral stress because that helps to further the tension into the hamstring connector. If you pick up 1 foot off the ground, the hamstring connector has to work a lot harder. So she's going to select at least a minimum of 2 unilateral movements in those 4 light. 1 unilateral movement is being performed in each workout. So she has to do a unilateral movement in workout 1, a unilateral movement in workout 2. So that's how we're going to divide the 4 light ones up. 2 in one workout, 2 in the other workout. 1 of the 2 in both workouts needs to be unilateral. Then the 2 medium movements, 1 of the medium movements is going to be performed in workout 1, the other medium movement in workout 2. Then we have 1 heavy lift, which is going to be your conventional deadlift. Now, of the 2 medium movements, the heaviest one is going to go in the workout where she does not do the heavy conventional deadlift. The lighter of the 2 medium is going to go in the workout that she does do the heavier lift, the conventional deadlift. So she needs to have those structured in that way. That's going to counterbalance the light work and the heavy work to make sure we're not having one day significantly more stressful than the other. Then her 1 heavy, when we're looking at hamstring connector, and she's looking specifically at conventional deadlift. This would be different if somebody was doing sumo deadlift. This would also be very different if somebody was aesthetic versus strength. So she's going to do that heavy deadlift 1 workout per week. But it depends on which workout we do, depends on her squats. She's also doing squats. If she's doing an underloaded variation of squats, so that way we don't overstress the upper connector, then the heavy deadlift happens in the first lower body workout of the week. The underloaded squat would happen in the second workout of the week. But if her squats were overloaded or even a normal load, they would need to be done first because they're more kind of at risk in terms of upper hamstring connective tissue injury. So she needs to do those when she's more fresh. So if her squat variation for that cycle is an overloaded variation or a normal variation, she has to do the squats first in the workout, first of the 2 lower body workouts, whereas the conventional deadlift would then be done in the second of the 2 lower body workouts. So there are some details right there of how we select our exercises. Why we have 4 light, 2 medium, 1 heavy is we're building a pyramid. We know that we get strong by building the supportive connective tissues of the movements and overall trying to eliminate any weak links in the chain. By doing more light and medium movements, we can get more overall workload done to improve upon the small weaknesses. And then doing the heavy thing just to check and see how everything's going for form and technique retention, and just keep the heavy stimulus on the CNS. So we need to have the base of our pyramid, the base of our strength. So we are only ever as strong as our base is wide, just like a pyramid. If you have very little base, no real muscle connections like muscle strength all around a joint, and then you try to lift something heavy, you will hurt that joint and you'll tear a muscle. So you have to have really good, strong joint support by having a lot of base movements like the lights and the mediums, so that way the joint is fully protected, fully strengthened, so then when you go to the heavy work, you can do it safely. So we need to have that pyramid style of workload. So that's why it's a 4-2-1. We talk about how to structure the light workouts per week, medium workouts per week, and the heavy workout per week. But then we also need to account for layering of other goals. So we know that in the meantime of us trying to address hamstring connector strength, we also have to work on balancing hamstring size and strength overall, balanced to quadriceps. Most people are quadricep dominant. She is as well. So of all the movements that we're selecting, the 4 light, 2 medium, 1 heavy, 2/3 need to address hamstrings, 1/3 needs to address quads. They all need to address the hamstring connector, but, excuse me, but within all of those movements addressing the hamstring connector, 2/3 of them need to address the hamstring connector plus the overall hamstring itself. 1/3 need to address the hamstring connector plus quads. Well, what in the world is that? Like, how would I address the hamstring connection plus quads as a focus? Front squats. Going to the bottom of a front squat stresses your upper hamstring connector, but a front squat in general is a quad-focused movement. The quads take more of a beating than the hamstrings do. So that's an example. So in the movements that she selects, 4-2-1 of light, medium, heavy, she needs to have the appropriate weight loads so that they actually fit into the categories of light, medium, heavy. She needs to have a balance of unilateral work in her light work. She needs to have the medium work counterbalance to the heavy work in terms of placement in the workouts. And 2/3 of the overall movements need to be hamstring focused, 2/3 need to be quad focused, but they all need to still include the hamstring connector if that's what we're mainly targeting. Then, to further make it more complicated, does she want strength only or does she need to build muscle mass? If it's strength only, these movements need to be done at 20 seconds or less of different challenging degrees, so that way we don't accumulate too much muscle damage. We get the strength benefits we want, but we don't need a lot of muscle damage. We more so want the strength benefit. But if she does want muscle damage, then we need to get into higher time under tension ranges to accumulate more muscular damage. That is typically done more so through the light and the medium movements rather than the heavy movement, because the heavy movement done under longer time under tension causes more overall stress to the system, especially when we know that she's already strained in her upper hamstring connector. So some of the movements need to be 20 seconds or less, some of them can be 30 to 40, and some of them only 20 to 30. So these are very frustrating. I'm sure listening to this sounds insane, but this is what you would pay for. This is what I do to everybody I work with. Every program has these types of factors included. All of these exercise selection choices, all of the programming sequences, and then balancing all the other goals. And that's only lower body. There are still choices that factor in squats. So of the 4 light, 2 medium, 1 heavy, do they address their squat deficits as well, their squat needs? And we have to do all of this to their upper body needs. We need to make sure we include mobility to make sure that they can, these are exercises that allow for full range of motion, so they don't get shortened on the range of motion. They keep good mobility for their sport or their activity. We also need to make sure that the overall conditioning of everything, the workload capacity needs to be addressed. So everything can't just be done super heavy and low reps. We need to have a decent amount of workload capacity, work volume. And this all needs to be addressed within their schedule, appropriate to their nutrition and sleep, appropriate to their recovery ability. Some people just recover better than others. Appropriate to their equipment availability, and so on and so forth. So if you want good programming, this is what's involved. All of this thought process goes into good programming. This is what I do for all my people. And I don't know, like I doubt, I guess I I guess they don't know that this is happening. So it's something that I do intuitively, but I do pay attention to. And I hope that by listening to this, I hope before they even heard this, if you're a client of mine, I hope that before you heard this podcast, you felt that your programming was appropriate for you. You may not have understood exactly why I picked everything that I picked, but it felt good. It flowed well. No major annoyances in the joints. You feel confident. There's a good variety to things. It feels exciting. You're enjoying your training. But then to know that all of this thought process goes into your training, I hope makes you feel supported. I hope it allows you to understand how important you are to me and how important and serious I take my job. I am very, very, very aware of the quality of effort that I give people. And I do things in a manner that are not the most efficient time-wise. I know that. But I'm okay with that. I want to write programs per person the best I possibly can. The way in which I do that is as streamlined as possible, so I can work with a lot of people and I can help people to a good degree. But I purposely do not choose to work with as many people as I have questioning or asking or wanting me to, because I cannot do a good job if I get overextended. So I turn people down on a regular basis, which doesn't feel good because that's never what I got into this for. And I try to push them onto like other clients, other trainers who I work with that are clients of mine, if they have openings, or I have them do some type of programming, maybe to a lesser intensive degree. But I try my best to say yes to as many people as I can, but never to an extent where it'll lose the quality of work that I do with the people I work with. That is something that should be addressed and attentive to by anyone who does programming. You can hear the detail that goes into this. And to write programs well, it does take time. And all of these decisions are individually decided upon. The question you have to say then is, what degree of attention do I feel I need? If you want programming that will allow you to become your best, then you need to pay for the best programming available. And the best programming isn't cheap. The highest level athletes in all sports pay the highest prices for coaching. The best coaches in the world cost the most. This is something to consider. If the best athletes in a single sport pay the most for coaching, do you think that's a coincidence? How could it be a coincidence if every single sport that is true of? The best powerlifters pay the most. They counter that by trying to do supplement deals. They do online programming of their own. They have their own ways to make money to pay for their programming. The best aesthetic athletes pay the highest prices for coaches, for nutritionists, because that's what it's going to take to become their best. They need the best knowledge of who they're working with. The only way to get the best of their knowledge is to pay them for their time and attention, so that way they don't need to give time and attention to more other people. The more people your coach has to go to get the money they need, the less attention you're going to get. Same is true in business. I've read so many business books, and there are people who talk about having an advisor, having a mentor. The more you pay for a mentor, the more attention you get from them, the more individualized, personalized attention, and commonly, the more productive results you will get. So if you want to be your best, you have to pay the best. You have to have the best programming, and the best programming isn't cheap. Now, does everybody need to pay for individualized program? No, not at all. Can you make the best of what you have in every moment of life? Yes. If you can only afford $100 a month, can you be your best within the limit of $100 a month? Yes. But if somebody has a budget of $1,000 a month, can they be better? Yes. That's just hard truth of life. So ask yourself, where are you? If you're a beginner, if you're new to this, if you're kind of getting into it, then starting with programming that might not be the most personalized, meaning like it's not a $400 a month kind of thing, makes sense. You're not going to need that much attention. Now, this is an analogy just to get the point across. But if somebody's severely overweight and they've never exercised in their life, do they need the best program in order to make progress? No. They could do jumping jacks in the corner for 30 minutes and they're going to lose weight. It didn't matter exactly what they do. They just need to move. Now, there are endless asterisks to everything I just said there. Is if they're going to move, is there a best way to move? Yes, I know that. But the point is, if they're new to it, doing any of it is helpful. As they would progress under kind of like beginner type stuff, and they want to become intermediate, they do have to then have better programming. So instead of doing jumping jacks in the corner for 30 minutes, maybe they're going to say, hey, you know what? This is really only addressing like my lungs. I'm not really getting any stronger. So maybe I want to do leg press for strength, back rows from upper back, and maybe I'll do overhead press or chest presses for like push muscles, and then I'll also do the jumping jacks. So they get a little more detailed. As that becomes too easy, or as they progress to that, they'll start to realize, hey, you know what? I'm doing the leg press, but when I have to kind of kneel down on one leg to pick up something off the floor or to tie my shoe, I feel really unstable. I don't feel really good balance. So maybe paired with the leg press, I need to do a unilateral movement. Okay, well, I'll do the unilateral movement plus the leg press. That'll give me my next step of progress for legs. Then for my upper body, I'm really only doing back, I'm doing rows and say chest presses. I'm not really training my vertical planes. So maybe I'll start alternating rows and pull downs, and I'll start alternating chest presses with overhead presses, getting more complex, getting to that next level. That's what we would continue to do with our programming. Continue to get it more complex and more personalized to your needs. So eventually, after they would run that program for a while, they say, hey, you know what? I'm getting really strong on the leg press, and I'm doing really low reps, but that's not really a lot of workload, so I'm not really getting fat loss anymore. I'm just kind of like getting a lot stronger. My legs are really getting built up, but I'm not losing weight right now. You know, I might be losing fat. They probably are. Actually, they absolutely are. They're losing fat and building muscle at the same time, so their weight's not going down, but they are getting lower body fat. But they might say, well, I want to go into more strength stuff because I like this. It's fun to lift heavy things. So I want to move my programming more towards strength. Or they say, you know what, I'm enjoying this, but I'd like to look leaner. I want to move my programming more towards aesthetics. So then all of a sudden you'd start to push in that direction. So ask yourself, where are you? If you're kind of beginning into this, then chances are the lower cost services are totally fine, as long as you're feeling confident with what's happening and you're seeing results. If the results are kind of fading out and you feel like things are ho-hum and getting bored, and you yet still want to be your best, you want to be better, then you may have to devote more into the process. That might mean more time, more attention paid to nutrition outside of just training, more attention paid to sleep, more attention paid to just happiness, paying attention to your emotional and mental health as that influences our physical health. And you may need to pay more into programming. Again, I am not making this as a kind of a form of a commercial, but I do want to raise the awareness that if you continually search for the cheapest options, you are going to get the cheapest results. Are there good things that are cheap? Yes. Are there bad things that are expensive? Yes. You can find the outliers in both areas, but in general, cheaper programming is not as good as more expensive. So if you truly want to be your best and you're ready for that, you're an intermediate wanting to be advanced, or you're advanced and you want to get a pro card, or you want to get an elite total, you want to get a national record, you need to go to that next level. Remember that the highest level athletes pay the highest prices for coaching. And that is universally true across all sports, so it's not a coincidence. So, to the person who made the Facebook post, that'll probably never listen to this podcast, but who cares, I'm going to post it on that answer anyhow in their comment section. I'm still going to post this podcast link. But I want them to know, and I want everybody to know, that do you have to pay a lot for programming? No, you don't. You can get programming help for cheap. But where are you? If you're wanting to stay active, you're wanting to stay healthy, and you enjoy having somebody write it for you so that way you don't have to think about it, and you just like working out, then the cheap stuff is great. There's probably no need for you to pay more money because you're not really wanting to get more from it. You're happy with what you have. But if you want that next step, chances are, if your progress is slow or stalled, then you need to take the next step in what type of help you're getting. If you want that next step and what you're doing now is progressing and getting better over time, then you're fine. Just stay where you're at. What you're doing well. No need to shake the boat. Okay? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if you're plateaued, if you're frustrated, if you're wanting more, pay more. Put more into the process. If you're doing your best in nutrition and training, but you're shit in the bed and not doing a really good job of nutrition, come on now. Don't pay more money for programming until you get your nutrition right. Don't pay more money for programming until you get sleep consistent. Don't pay more money for programming until you get your mindset right. The best program only works if you work. Reading squats for 5x5 doesn't do anything. You have to do the damn squats for 5x5. You have to do what's in the program for the program to work, not just get a better program. Do not pay more for programming until you are ready to give what you need both in the gym and outside of the gym. Do not pay more until you're ready. But when you're ready, if you've plateaued and you're stuck, pay more, put more into it, and get over that hump, get over that hurdle. So, in online coaching, in in-person coaching, programming, for the most part, you do pay for what you get. If you want the best, you're going to have to pay for the best. Look at pricing, look at their educational history, look at their client history. Those three things should balance out. In comparison to others, if they have a high price but low education, might not be the best option for you. If they have the highest price, good education, but they haven't proven it, they don't really have a high clientele number, probably not the best option. If they have a low price, great education, great client experience, snatch that person up before their prices go up, because they're probably going to go up pretty soon. So this is what we want to consider. And I hope that this conversation does help. I hope it didn't come across as a commercial. I just really wanted people to take into consideration this concept. And I think it's just helpful to know, like I said, what is in the programming, what's involved in the programming, so you could see the complexity of what goes into it, to know that what you're paying for is worth what you're paying. I hope for all of my clients that you believe what you're getting from me is adequate for what you're paying for me. Actually, I hope it kind of exceeds it. But I hope you're happy. And if you're not in any way, please always reach out to me. I am always happy to kind of step up my game or talk about different options or figure out different ways in which to help you best. That's the whole purpose of what I'm doing, or what I got into this for, is to help people the best I can. So please let me know if you're ever frustrated or struggling. But if you're not a client of mine and you're considering who to go with, this is the type of information I hope would be helpful. So consider those things when you look at different training options or programming options or person options, is cost, educational experience, and client experience. They have to match. If they match for what you're paying for, then you're good. Go with it and have fun. Okay. Hopefully this helps. Thank you for listening. If you do like this podcast, if you think this podcast, whether it's this one specifically or a podcast in general, is helpful, please share it. The more people we can share it to, the happier and healthier the world will be. Also, if you like this type of information, you can always find more from us on our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter accounts under the name Brutal Iron Gym. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd always love to hear from you. The podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. You can tell us at our email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.